Collective Harvest Experimental Salmon Trap, known as the Pound Net, in the Lower Columbia River. This is a briefing. Mr. Adrian Tuohy, please.
You might want to give him just a minute. I told him to come on at 4 because I told him we were behind, but now we're not behind anymore.
I don't know if that's ever a good idea.
I still told him to come on at 4 anyways, so he should, and I just emailed him too. So.
Okay. There, I saw his name pop up. There he is.
Hey, how's it going?
Afternoon, Adrian.
Great, thanks so much for having me. Well, is it time to share my screen here?
Yes, sir, it is.
All right, great. All right, can everyone see that screen okay?
Yeah, it looks good.
You can hear me all right?
Yes, sir.
Great, well, thanks so much for the opportunity to share our work. I'm Adrian Tuohy, biologist and project manager with Wild Fish Conservancy. And for the last number of years, I've been researching this experimental commercial fish trap in the Lower Columbia River for selective harvest. With this project, we've been striving to identify a viable alternative gear to the conventional gill net to reduce bycatch and hatchery impacts in the Columbia River Basin. Ultimately, we feel this project is beneficial, not just to wild fish recovery, but to fishermen, their communities, and resource management agencies as well. I'll start just with some brief history. Everybody knows the story. The Columbia River was once one of the most productive salmon rivers in the world. And now it's not. And that's a result of harvest, habitat loss, dams, and effects from hatcheries. Today we have less than 1/10 of the historical abundance of these runs, and various stocks are listed under the ESA. So this has had some pretty severe consequences for commercial fishing communities that depend on this resource. This is a photograph of Cathlamet, Washington, where our project has taken place the last number of years. And Cathlamet, like so many other towns throughout the region, depended on salmon, a big part of the economy. And today, with ESA constraints, the general loss of the resource, it's hard to make a living off of just a handful of commercial fishing days. Despite the loss of the resource, fishermen year after year continue to want to fish in the Columbia River, and they're fishing with one of the only gears that's legal and available to them, and that's the gill net. So this brings us to this mixed stock fishery challenge using gill nets in the Columbia River. It's a mixed stock fishery trying to target hatchery origin fish, but of course, wild salmon and steelhead are entangled. And we know that when a gill net captures a fish by the gills, that can cause some damage and can result in mortality of wild salmonids and bycatch stocks. So this ends up constraining fisheries. And overall, it's a situation that's detrimental to fish recovery and also to fishermen and their opportunity to participate in these fisheries. So there's a clear need to find a way forward and identify alternative gears. And so policies 3619 and 3620 have encouraged development and implementation of these alternative gears to target hatchery fish and reduce mortality to wild stocks. And in theory, of course, this is both good for fish and good for the fishermen. By reducing bycatch and hatchery impacts to wild salmonids listed under the ESA, and good for fishermen by reducing those bycatch impacts to increase fishing opportunity and hopefully to improve the quantity of hatchery fish harvested and also the quality of harvested fish products. We know when fish are harvested through means of seining or trapping, it's a high quality product, very little loss of scales, bruising. So there's a lot of potential to add value to these products with alternative gears. So at Wild Fish Conservancy, one alternative that we thought deserved some attention was the fish trap. And fish traps were used by Indigenous communities, tribes, First Nations for thousands of years for sustainable harvest of salmon and steelhead. And the idea of using fish traps for salmon was adopted by Europeans in the 1870s in the Columbia River. And ideas were brought in from Scandinavia, the Great Lakes regions, and fish traps became prominently used and quite a force in these fisheries for many years, from Washington up to Alaska. And fish traps, along with seines, fish wheels, gill nets, various gears, overall resulted in overharvest. And with a lack of regulation at the time, that helped decimate these stocks and has resulted in this problem that we're seeing today. Eventually, fish traps, other fixed gears were banned in Washington in 1934. But despite the ban of the gear and the fact that fish traps played a role in the decline of wild salmon, we thought at Wild Fish Conservancy that when modified and regulated as fisheries are today, they could play a great role for selective harvest as an alternative to the conventional gill net to reduce bycatch and hatchery impacts. So since 2016, I've been conducting this research in the Lower Columbia River with Wild Fish Conservancy, and it's been quite the journey. We've been researching this fish trap at a site near Kathlamet, Washington, in the Kathlamet Channel, and there are some limitations to evaluating just a single site. For example, it might be hard to determine what overall bycatch encounters might be by just looking at one site in particular. Bycatch encounters could vary dramatically depending on where you're at in that river. But this research has given us great insight into release mortality effects from the gear. So that's what we've been focusing on. Our objectives over the last number of years have been pretty straightforward and consistent. We've been constructing, modifying, testing operation of this fish trap for selective harvest and also research and monitoring purposes in the river about 100 miles below Bonneville Dam. We've been determining the effectiveness of this gear in selectively targeting hatchery salmon. And we've been estimating immediate and post-release survival of salmonid bycatch, so wild origin fishes. Immediate survival, of course, is survival from capture to release, a pretty crude metric. Do those fish survive from capture to release? Post-release survival is once you do eventually release that fish from your gear, does it survive to pass these dams and hopefully to spawn? And release mortality, as we know, is an essential component of determining overall mortality from fisheries. So it's very important to understand release mortality effects. So in order to build this trap, we went back to these old records to figure out how fish traps were built. We were working with local commercial fisherman Blair Peterson out of Kathlamet, Washington, dug through boxes of these old records to see how these traps were built effectively in the Lower Columbia, late 1800s and early 1900s. We drove these untreated wood pilings, a little over 40 of them for this particular trap. The pilings serve as anchors to attach your nets from the high water mark down to the river bottom and enable you to hold those nets in place in those strong currents. And then you attach the nets whenever it's time to fish. It takes between 4 days to a week, depending on how experienced your crew is. And in general, fish traps, I would say, it varies quite a bit depending on your design and the location. But they cost about $100,000 to $150,000 to construct. Here's the design that we've been researching for the last number of years, so since 2016. The basic lead heart spiller design that was commonly employed in the lower river. Fish that are returning to spawn encounter the lead, which is positioned perpendicular to shore. There's fine meshed net that's attached from the high water mark down to the riverbed, and fish effectively try to find their way past this wall. And in the process, they're guided into a compartment that we call the heart. And due to the shape of that heart, fish just have a hard time finding their way out. Because generally when they're entrapped, fish will nose into the current, whether it's the flood or the ebb. And eventually they're guided by their natural instinct to move upstream and against that current through the tunnel into what we call the spiller. And from the spiller, you could then sort the catch through various means. The tunnel here is conical in shape, wide entrance, narrow outlet. Once the fish move through that, they rarely, if ever, find their way out of the spiller. And so from above the spiller, you can observe as the fish are entering. You don't want to have too many fish in your trap. The whole goal is to maximize survival of bycatch. So you observe until you have enough fish. And eventually, we use this line and pulley solar-powered electric winch to guide the mesh bottom of the spiller compartment upwards in the water column. And you want to keep your fish in, you know, a foot or two of water, ideally. And you quickly guide these fish out with rope and pulley into a live well sorting box. And this is generally how fish traps were operated in the past. It's a modification to the classic design, but generally that's similar to how it was done, how they were railed out. And in this sorting chamber, you can then sort out your bycatch, steelhead, wild salmon, gather data in a very low impact way, get your measurements, scan for tags, and release them. And then all of your hatchery stocks, you can selectively harvest. It's, you know, these fish are in pristine condition and eventually could secure very high market value. Just hardly a scale off of them, no bruising. But between 2017 and 2019, we were tagging all these fish. Our whole goal was to estimate post-release survival. We conducted a mark recapture study. We tracked these fish from the fish trap site all the way up to McNary Dam. So a 400 kilometer migration. We used McNary Dam as our final detection point, mirroring Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife's same studies that were conducted in the past. However, it should be noted we were operating about 100 miles farther downriver. So this is a more rigorous post-release mortality study evaluated over a greater distance and duration. So we published our work on post-release survival of Chinook and steelhead last year. This is peer-reviewed published work in the Journal of Fisheries. And this is for this old design, our prototype fish trap design. And since then we have made improvements. But for this old prototype design, which uses the line and pulley winch system, survival of Chinook was estimated at 99.5%. So an excellent result relative to other gears. For steelhead, also a very good result, 94.4% survival. And so since this study, we've made various improvements. We've identified ways to further improve survival and efficiency of the gear. And one way to do to improve survival is by using this passive capture design. And unfortunately, given the piling layout at this prototype site location here, we couldn't move any of the pilings that were already driven. So we retrofitted this trap, and it's not ideal, but it was enough to conduct this passive study that we conducted in 2019. So applying this upriver tunnel, that enables the fish to passively migrate into your spiller and then passively migrate into an upriver live well, where then you don't have to use line and pulley. There's no winch required. The fish don't ever have to be handled. There's basically no stress at all. Fish are migrating into a maze and they find their own way out of the maze. So we hypothesize that basically there should be no effect from this new design on fish survival. And this is how it looked in the field. It was an awkward retrofit to the old design, but it was enough to conduct this study to see if this new passive design could actually improve post-release survival from the old design. And with this, you capture fish basically one by one or in small schools as they passively migrate in. You close a pivot capture door, take a look at what you have. You harvest your hatchery salmon, and your wild salmon is released by just opening a door upriver on that live well. Now, there are various benefits of this new passive design. Reduced net contact, there's zero air exposure. There's extremely minimal handling of the bycatch, if any handling at all. There's no overcrowding, no burst swimming, you passively release the bycatch. So it's, to me, it's kind of the pinnacle of selective harvest. And then also for the fish that you do harvest, there's absolutely no bruising, no scale loss, just pristine, pristine fish. And so we put this all to the test in 2019. We tested it for sockeye and for coho. And so we tracked these fish once again through a mark recapture experiment over a 400 kilometer migration. And survival relative to the control group was 1.017, which indicates there's no detectable effect of the gear on salmon survival. So that's what we found for sockeye. This has been peer reviewed. Will be published any day now in the North American Journal of Fisheries Management. We assess coho survival as well through an alternative methodology. We use a net pen holding approach, which have been done by Washington and Oregon in the past. So coho salmon, they tend not to move above Bonneville Dam in large enough numbers to do a mark recapture experiment. So either you got to take thousands of coho salmon to get a precise estimate, or you conduct one of these net pen holding studies. And so we mirrored the study design of past net pen holding studies, held fish for 48 hours, and we didn't have a single mortality for coho salmon from this passive design. And so that's a result that hasn't been achieved for any other gear. No other gear has come close. This has also been published in that North American, or will be published in that North American Journal piece, peer-reviewed work. So it's clear to me that we're on the right track with this passive design. Things are only getting better. I think it was good before, and the future is bright here. And I look forward to seeing this scaled up at a new trap site in the future here. And I think it's really clear to me that if we do test this for steelhead and Chinook, some critical limiting bycatch stocks, I think it's highly likely that we'll achieve survival near 100% as we did for coho and for sockeye. And so when you compare this to other gears, the mortality rates for fish traps are excellent. And especially one other thing I want to draw attention to here is that the gill net, as you can see for steelhead, I put unknown. That's because gill nets have not been studied for steelhead bycatch in the lower Columbia River. PAC has approved a rate, but it doesn't mean that any release mortality study has been conducted. So that I just want to bring that up because it makes it very hard to weigh the pros and cons of alternative gears relative to conventional gears. And I just think that's a data gap that should be addressed if we actually want to weigh the pros and cons of these different gears for salmon recovery. Between 2018 and today, we've been conducting commercial test fisheries to see how this fish trap could operate in a commercial selective harvest setting. We've been using these two capture processes with this experimental trap. It's kind of this Frankenstein design, somewhere between using this passive design and our old spilling technique. So we're capturing fish through those two methods. All the wild salmon and steelhead are released, and just the hatchery, the targeted hatchery fish are dip netted from the live well, live bled, and immediately put into slush ice. They're commercial sampled, packed into fresh ice. Washington Fish and Wildlife is present on site the whole time, gathering genetics, scale samples, looking at run timing, stock composition. And I think this really highlights what I envision as the dual purpose of fish traps into the future. I think it'd be fantastic if you could have fishermen working alongside Washington Fish and Wildlife, or Oregon Fish and Wildlife. You're sustainably harvesting these hatchery stocks while conducting this great research. Say you have 10 or 20 traps 100 miles below Bonneville Dam, you're collecting great data that could be used for in-season adaptive management while you're harvesting sustainably and contributing to those economies in the lower Columbia Basin. All the fish that are harvested here are transported about a mile downriver to Cathlamet, where they're hoisted out and taken to CNH classic fish. This is all local, kept in Cathlamet. Then we've also been working on direct marketing channels, making contact with high-end chefs in the Seattle, Portland area. The whole goal is to eventually have these channels established so that fishermen can secure more money for their harvested seafood products. This is Renee Erickson, a renowned chef in the Seattle area who really wants these fish. She's really into sustainability, only serving sustainable fish that are handled well and that are, you know, it's a traceable product. And she gets that with the fish trap. And she wants to serve more of these fish. And I imagine into the future, demand will be quite high due to the sustainability of the product, the quality, the story. It's you're harvesting in river, preserving marine prey for orca whales. That's a big deal these days. So I do believe that there will be high demand for this into the future. And that'll add value to fisheries products. From our test fishery, general conclusions, I think it's clear the fish trap can match or exceed the capture effectiveness of other gears. There's very minimal estimated mortality to ESA-listed stocks, low carbon footprint and fuel costs. I think there's a very high likelihood of sustainable market certification. The product quality is very high. There's substantial potential for added value to trap caught products. And things are only getting better as we continue to modify the gear and improve survival bycatch. Moving forward, I see some additional research needs. We need to try traps in new river locations. We've just been looking at one site. And as I mentioned, it's hard to determine the bycatch encounter rates for this gear just from looking at one site. So we need to try new locations, look at potential improvements in gear efficiency as well, but also differences in bycatch encounters. And we hope to do that in the coming couple of years. We also need to do more research of this passive trap design that has shown so much promise, and we need to scale that up. So we're gonna be doing that over the next couple of years. I think we might identify some likely improvements to steelhead and Chinook release survival, with the effect of reducing ESA bycatch impacts and hopefully improving selective fishing opportunity with alternative gears. And then lastly, I think it's really important that we understand gillnet release mortality effects as well. As I pointed out, for steelhead, release mortality for gillnets has never been studied. There are no release mortality data for gillnets for steelhead in the lower Columbia. And right now, management is just making a guess. An assumption has been made. And so that affects your comparison with alternative gears. It could be that alternative gears have been somewhat sidelined potentially by this assumption of gillnet mortality. We don't know what it is. So I think it could be a good idea to look into it. Also moving forward, as we continue identifying viable alternative gears, we need to potentially look into implementation. And Washington has initiated this emerging fishery process, revealing whether or not to implement alternative gears from seines to traps. So that's a next step. And then continuing to work to add value to seafood products through sustainable market certification, establishing these direct marketing channels, using best harvest practices, live bleeding, icing. And eventually, I think a transition program could be helpful to incentivize a transition to these alternative gears. And eventually, of course, regulating, adjusting accordingly, and monitoring these alternative gear fisheries. Into the future, I see various benefits to fishermen. Having multiple tools in the toolbox will be helpful, from gill nets, tangle nets, seines to traps. You can then apply the appropriate tools depending on the challenges that are faced each and every year. Greater quantity of hatchery fish harvested, greater quality of harvested products, higher fish prices from sustainable certification, clever branding, marketing, direct marketing, and greater profitability of Lower Columbia River fisheries. I think this is all very, very achievable. I think we're basically there, and it's only going to become more achievable as we continue to research this passive design and show, almost eliminate bycatch mortality of wild salmonids. That's the goal. Benefits to wild salmonid recovery are pretty clear in river selective harvest. We could target those hatchery origin fish, reduce PHAS throughout the Columbia Basin. There have been calls to increase hatchery production for orca whales. This is a great way to potentially target those excess hatchery fish, mop them up so you don't have excessive PHAS. Also, bycatch mortality reduction and potential to improve wild salmonid escapement if the right policies are in place. And also, I see some very clear benefits to resource management. As I mentioned, traps could serve this dual purpose of research and sustainable harvest. Traps serve as great research and monitoring stations, looking at run timing, run size, stock composition, genetics, all 100 miles below Bonneville Dam, which could be really helpful to in-season adaptive management. And also you can improve the sustainability of hatchery programs, as I mentioned before. The last thing I'm gonna leave you with here, is just a recommendation. As I mentioned, bycatch release mortality is an essential component to evaluating overall ESA impacts from fisheries. Release mortality rates are necessary prior to implementing alternative gears. And I think that should be true. That should be true for all gears. And I think anyone in management would agree that having information on release mortality is important. Release mortality has been researched, peer-reviewed, and published for alternative gears. More research is scheduled to occur. It's been demanded. And I look forward to seeing it. And I think there should be more funding for that. It's, I think, critical for the future of these fisheries. This is in contrast now to gillnet release mortality for critical bycatch steelhead, where release mortality has not been researched. There are no release mortality data, and that is true, and that is the fact. Yet the gear is implemented annually with unknown effects to ESA-listed fishes. So I think that data gap needs to be filled. Impacts from harvest policy or gear changes, they remain a guess until release mortality is evaluated for all gears in an equivalent manner on an equal playing field. Right now, I've seen a bit of a double standard for alternative gears in the conventional, and I just think everything should be looked at fairly. So that's all I have to say. Thank you so much for the opportunity to share our work, and let me know if you have any questions.
Adrian, thank you very much for that. Very informative. Any questions from the commission?
This is Commissioner Graybill.
Commissioner Graybill.
Adrian, thank you very much. This is all terrific news. We're very much impressed with how this trap operates, and I would like to see more of them in the Columbia River because they are efficient and mortality rates are fantastic. You did mention, though, that there are no mortality rates known for steelhead with gillnets. And I have a release mortality rate adopted by the Technical Advice Committee for Mainstem Columbia River Fisheries affecting ESA listed Upper Columbia Spring Chinook and Upper Columbia Steelhead. Table from S. Ellis, da 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 da. So, I mean,
that too.
Maybe you might be familiar with this chart, but this has been widely distributed. We use this in the Upper Columbia Salmon Recovery Board, for example. And it does have a main stem gillnet mortality rate in the summer gillnets at 59%. I don't know if you've seen this.
Are you talking about for Chinook salmon?
Or for when the Chinook are the targeted species, incidentally caught steelhead in gill nets is 59% in the summer.
So, yeah, if you look for release mortality data for steelhead in the fall fishery, that has never been conducted. And okay. The TAC approved rate is a guess. It's based on, as Washington will probably tell you, observational data of immediate mortality. So they've used immediate mortality to, in a sense, project release mortality. But release mortality has never been studied, and release mortality is completely different from immediate mortality.
Gotcha.
And so I guess that's the double standard I've been seeing here, is that, you know, alternative gears have been researched quite a bit, release mortality effects peer-reviewed, published. We're not just making assumptions based off immediate mortality for alternative gears, but for gillnets, we are, and somehow that's okay. And I just think maybe it should actually be studied.
All right, good. Thank you.
Commissioner Kehoe and Commissioner McIsaac, that's the only ones I can see right now.
Anderson.
Commissioner Anderson as well.
And Linville.
Okay, Bob, go ahead. You got to unmute yourself, Bob.
Three quick questions. I don't want to dominate, but thank you for the presentation. So my questions are, you showed a slide regarding mortality rates or survival rates. What about encounters? I mean, because at the end of the day, we're talking about dead fish, right? So you know, I'm not a mathematician, but I do know that you apply the mortality rate to the encounter rate, and that's really at the end of the day what we're looking at. So. So specifically with steelhead, what's your encounter rate?
So it completely depends on the year and probably where you're at. But as it stands, the fish trap encounters more steelhead, a lot like a beach seine does. So that's why we need to continue to improve post-release survival of steelhead. But then
I'm sorry to interrupt, but that was the same experience that the experimental seine gears experienced in Columbia River, high encounters. So, okay. I think for full disclosure in the future, it would be useful to provide that data. Full disclosure. So just a little practice pointer there. What about, second question, and then I've got one more. What about the mark rate? You know, how many fish do you actually have to handle before you get keepers, hatchery fish that you can keep?
So that also depends on the year. I'd say on average, it's you know, half your catch is wild, half of it is hatchery when it comes to Chinook and for coho, for the mark rate anyway.
So then you're out there, you're handling a lot of fish, and it takes time. You're not putting all of these down in the hatch, so to speak.
Right. You're throwing the whole goal of selective harvest and alternative gears.
And then one last one. There was some reference to the TAC, the Technical Advisory Committee, part of the Columbia Compact. There was some testimony earlier today that the TAC has not approved this fishing gear for use. Is that true? And if not, why not?
So I guess it's my understanding that Washington Fish and Wildlife, the director, could implement fish traps through emerging fisheries right now. I don't think they necessarily have to, correct me if I'm wrong. I think you guys might know the answer to this one then better than me.
But that's not my question. I mean, was it submitted to TAC? And if they, what, you know, first of all, did you submit this to TAC?
Yeah, we've submitted this to TAC, and they've approved interim mortality rates. They want to see more research of release mortality, which, yeah, I think more research is great and is needed, and especially to take a look at this passive design, because I'd say that's similar to, you know, a tangle net versus a gill net. It's almost a completely different gear at that point. But yeah, we have submitted our prototype results to TAC, and they have approved interim mortality rates.
Okay, but what about approving it for use as a commercial fishery?
Do they have to approve it for use? I'm pretty sure.
I don't know. I'm just asking you.
No, they don't.
Okay. Okay. Well, thank you very much. No more questions.
I see Bill Twight. Bill, did you want to comment before I go on to another commissioner or three?
I just thought it would help the commission understand that approval for gear is not TAC's role. TAC's role in the Columbia is to provide mortality rates that have been agreed to by the managing agencies, by the USV Oregon parties. It's up to individual managers to choose which gears they approve and don't approve.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you.
If I may call on Molly next.
Larry, you said three more. I've had my hand up for quite a while, so
I'm sorry. I can only see four people at a time. So we're going to go with Molly first, and then you, Kim, and then Don and Jim.
So my question is, what is sort of the vision for this being in like real world use? What does it look like for commercial fishermen? Who owns the traps? I'm sorry, I'm speaking of the traps specifically. You know, who owns the traps? Who gets to use them? I would think permitting for building new ones would be a logistical nightmare on the private side of things. And so I'm just curious about how this works in a real world setting.
Yeah, so you're right. Right now, permitting is challenging, and it takes time. And if you want to put in a fish trap, well, first of all, they're kind of illegal. So it might be you could see that could be a barrier to jumping into this right now. But yeah, permitting takes time. You got to plan, you know, at least a year in advance. And, you know, I'm working on preparing applications for fishermen. Maybe they could download them. And so most things are already kind of pre-filled out to help out with that process. I think fishermen will just need some help to navigate that process, because it is tricky right now. A lot of agencies involved. And then when it comes to ownership, that's another question that'll have to be resolved over time. It could be owned by one fisherman. It could be owned by multiple fishermen, a cooperative. So that needs to be sorted out, and probably would depend on the state, you know, various agencies that are regulating it. What was your other question?
I think that mostly covered it. What sort of pops into my head too is from being in agriculture myself is when the barrier to entry is permitting hurdles and a big upfront cost, what often seems to end up happening is you get sort of these big players that get to participate and not the mom and pop type folks. And so I'm just, I guess maybe I would have a comment around that like, let's try to be, if this is the direction we are hoping to head in any way, let's sort of maybe be prepared that we don't get, you know, a big, you know, maybe even out of country, you know, commercial fishing group that is the benefactor of this interesting sort of new old technology. So I guess that's more of a comment, but you answered my question. Thank you.
I couldn't agree with you more there. And that's why I mentioned some kind of transition program into the future. I think, you know, from alternative gears, well, such as fish traps, you can gather great data that's really beneficial to management. Selective harvest, you're addressing this hatchery threat, hopefully reducing overall bycatch mortality. So that there are a lot of benefits to society. And I think some sort of subsidy would make a lot of sense to help out local fishermen to install fish traps or acquire seines, which are also very expensive, similar to traps. So yeah, I think a transition program, I'm all in favor of that. And I hope to see that happen in the near future.
Okay, we'll go to Commissioner Thorburn, then Commissioner McIsaac, and then Commissioner Anderson, please.
Yeah, my questions are basically some specificity on some of the earlier questions. And I'll just go through them. The first similar observations to Molly, I was thinking of particularly it's a permanent structure, so it will deal with land use permitting and shoreline, which can vary by jurisdiction. So I just will comment at this point that I see potential real hurdles with the permitting question. I was wondering, have you done, I should have started by thanking you for coming back and updating us with the long-term survival studies, which you had promised with our last presentation. So those were very interesting. Have you conducted the studies and the test fisheries in all of the various Columbia River fisheries at the single site, recognizing that's an issue? And then my second question was to have you comment. It's a fixed structure and it's adjacent or off the shore. So that, you know, with the different runs implies that you're gonna have high impact on certain species, particularly the steelhead that run along the shore. So I'd just like your thoughts on that versus other mobile kinds of gear.
Right, with a fixed gear, there are some limitations to that. However, fish traps don't have to be positioned right offshore. A lot of fish traps in the past were positioned actually in the middle of channels. So they weren't necessarily perpendicular to shore, running all the way to shore. So potentially, I would love to look into that. And I've seen some different spots in the river where I think it would be fantastic to try a fish trap that isn't actually adjacent to the shoreline and take a look at differences in bycatching counter aids. As I said before, we were just looking at one site currently, so it's a little hard to determine how, you know, say if you had 10 or 20 traps in the Columbia, would it be the same case for all of them? I don't know at this point. So I can't wait to conduct more research and try new locations and some that potentially aren't even adjacent to shore. There are permitting struggles with it, but I really hope to help fishermen who are interested overcome those barriers and those hurdles. And hopefully that could be kind of a part of some sort of alternative gear transition program, some technical assistance to help with the nightmare of permitting. And I want to continue to work to streamline the process if something like fish traps truly are to be legalized. I think that would just be, you got to provide that technical assistance. And then your other question, it was about, I couldn't quite see what you were getting at. You were saying, you're talking about test fisheries and...
Yeah, I was wondering if you'd run your studies and the test fisheries in all of the various fisheries of the Columbia, that is spring, summer, fall, the different species. Have you been doing the studies and the test fisheries in all the different fisheries?
Yeah, so we've focused primarily on the fall fisheries, so beginning in August through October for fall Chinook and coho. I think that's the primary fishery on the Columbia. But also we've conducted work in the springtime, and no test fisheries, but just research. So we conducted research from May through part of July targeting sockeye salmon, looking at bycatch survival rates for sockeye and for summer Chinook as well. But no test fisheries during that spring summer period.
Commissioner McIsaac.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Two questions, one quick one on the science and one on management. On science, how did you get your control group when you measured your catch and release mortality?
Yeah, and so is it okay if I share my screen here?
Yes, sir, please.
Great. So as you guys all know, when you're conducting these mark recapture experiments, it's very important to have a control group, because if you don't have a control group, you're not controlling for the effects of handling and tagging those fish, which has some measurable effect on survival of those fish. So right here, let's see if, here we go. Yeah, so why do you use a control group? You're controlling for that handling and tagging effect, which has an impact on survival of fish upriver. You're also controlling for effects such as fisheries that are occurring upriver, recreational, commercial, effects of predation from sea lions. You're controlling for fish veering off up tributaries before they reach Bonneville Dam. So that's why you use a control group, and it's essential. And you need to handle and tag these fish with a control and a treatment group in the same life history stage. It's really difficult to find an adequate control group for catch and release studies, because controls, of course, have to be available through some method of capture. That has, the key is to have no mortality associated with that capture method. And due to the difficulties in obtaining true control fish, often survival is assessed on comparing the relative survival rate of different groups of fish captured in different means. It relies on two crucial assumptions. First, that there's no mortality resulting from catching the control fish. And second, that handling mortality is the same for both control and treatment fish. So if you look at studies that were conducted for the seining, beach seining and purse seining, you have to capture this control fish in through some way. And what they did is they got these fish from Bonneville Adult Fish Passage Facility. So the fish climbed, navigated the dams to be passively captured in facility traps. The impact from that in that particular season is unknown. Those freely swimming fish are then dip netted for handling, tagging, recovery, and release. They're transferred in a truck. They're transported down a highway to the upstream end of the test fishing location. And then those fish are pumped back out to the river to repeat migration for a second time. So that's how the control group was done for seining studies. It's generally a six-step process there. What we did is fish navigated the lead and heart to be passively captured after immediately passing through the tunnel and dip netted out. So if you go back to the prior slide, you're trapping these fish at Bonneville Dam and dip netting them. These fish are passively captured through the tunnel, dip netted out before they've been brailed with this line and pulley stressful process of commercial capture. They're dip netted, tagged, and released. So it's a simple two-step process relative to trucking the fish, repeating the migration. Is it perfect? No, but it's likely a lot lower impact to the alternative methods that were used for seining. And actually, Washington Fish and Wildlife took a look at survival of our control group. The whole goal is to have no impact, no mortality impact from sourcing your control group. Well, Washington Fish and Wildlife conducted that analysis. They looked at our control fish that were sourced at the trap in 2017 compared to PD7 detection on pit tag array in the lower river. These were fish that were pit tagged as juveniles. So you would expect that those fish that tagged as juveniles have fully recovered from that handling and tagging process after, 3-4 years. So you'd expect our control fish to have worse survival relative to PD7 detecting these fish in the lower river. So what Washington found is that relative survival for the pound net control group was actually slightly higher than that of the PD7 control. So there was no detectable mortality effect from sourcing our control fish. So we have proof here that our control group had no mortality effect. And also on top of that, since we're able to alternately assign control and treatment groups throughout each day, we can ensure equivalent stock composition, addressing a problem that was encountered with prior saline studies. So I would argue this was a much better control group than what was done in the past, yet imperfect, as all control groups are.
Okay, that was quite an answer. Let me ask you this quickly then. In the joint state PRC process, we got a handout last October about the performance of the cath-lam at pound net in comparison to the zones 4 and 5 gillnet in 2016, 17, and 18. And they boiled it down to a value per natural origin B and X steelhead mortality. And for two of those years, it showed that the zone 4 and 5 gillnet fishery was vastly superior to the cath-lam at pound net. When I look at some of the data, it looks like either the cath-lam at pound net didn't catch very many Chinook, or it caught tons and tons of steelhead more than the gillnet fishery does in zones 4 and 5. Are you familiar with that? And we can talk offline if it's a long answer, but are you familiar with that? And do you have any reaction to that?
So yeah, my reaction to that is that, as I said, we have work to do to further reduce steelhead mortality. And what we're seeing are some really promising results from this passive design. And I believe it's highly likely that we'll see survival rates damn near 100% for steelhead and for Chinook into the future. So this old design is obsolete, and we're moving forward, and we have this new passive design that shows a ton of promise to basically nearly eliminate that bycatch mortality effect. At that point, it doesn't matter necessarily how many steelhead you encounter.
Okay, so that was just a different design than you're using now then. Okay.
Yeah, and you're completely right. I mean, it's all about the bycatch mortality rate and your the amount of encounters. But from what we're seeing here from this new passive design, it's incredibly encouraging. And as is, it depends on the year and what runs are depressed. I think if you have a very good fishing year, the fish trap will work great as another tool in the toolbox, even with that, with this prototype method. But moving forward, yeah, we need to reduce that mortality rate. And I think the fish trap is one of the only gears capable of further having improved mortality estimates.
Okay, thank you.
Commissioner Anderson, please.
Yeah, and this is may not be lend itself to an answer, and it may be kind of ancillary. But the, I guess it has to do with, the suggestion or fact as you state that about the release studies mortality post release mortality studies steelhead in gill nets, and I guess I'm still being a sports fisherman and knowing impacts on wild steelhead that are released, I wonder about the kind of study that's been done on wild released steelhead in sport fisheries. And so I don't know if you're prepared to, answer that. And I'm not sure it's a well-phrased question, but it is a continued concern of mine. The second point is I'm wondering about the impact that the pound nets have or the predation issue associated with from marine mammals on fish that have passed through the pound net, and whether or not you have a handle on that. And then finally, I guess, are most of the pound net sites below Bonneville? And if so, what are we looking at in terms of numbers of potential sites?
So I'll start with your last one there. Yeah, fish traps were mostly used below Bonneville Dam historically, some were above, but I think there are a great number of sites available in the lower river. But I envision a future where there's, you know, maybe 10 to 20 traps. I of course don't see the fish trap as the only tool, just one of many. And I'm sure not all fishermen would use traps. Each fisherman would have their preference. So yeah, I think most of the sites are below Bonneville Dam, and there's plenty of room to, for, you know, 20, 30 traps out there. I mean, there were hundreds there historically. I'll go to your second question, which was assessing marine mammal potential predation effects. So that work hasn't been done for any year, as far as I know, in the lower Columbia River. This year, during the test fishery, we saw a sea lion about 400 yards away once. And Washington Fish and Wildlife can confirm this. We saw a seal just the other day, but pretty, this year, very infrequent, and it depends on the year. Marine mammal mortality effects could definitely be assessed. We don't know what that is, but I do think it should be probably assessed for all years. And then going back to recreational mortality and recreational fishing mortality effects, I think you're right. There hasn't been, as far as I know, a well-conducted recreational hook and line study conducted in the lower Columbia River, similar to the effects of gill nets on steelhead, hasn't been studied. So I think it's really important to fill that data gap as well. And in fact, the fish trap could work as a fantastic control group for those to assess those gears. I think it's just a no-brainer study to conduct. Throw a gill net out there right next to the fish trap. You could even do hook and line studies right there. Take the fish all in the same way and track those fish to Bonneville Dam. It's very achievable. And I hope to see that, because it's a great research tool. It's sitting right there. We need to fill these data gaps.
Well, I think that'd be really critical, because what we do is we have dueling thoughts and dueling ideas about what studies have been done or not done, and it just becomes confusing and distracting to have that debate go on. It'd be a lot better to answer some questions as we go forward.
Completely agree. We got to evaluate these gears in an equivalent way across the board. And first of all, conduct the research. It has to be done. And when you're comparing these gears, for example, when Commissioner McIsaac was talking about, you know, impacts per revenue, or I think that's what he was talking about. The fact is, we don't know the impacts of the gill net. We're completely guessing. It could be way, way worse, or it could be better, but we have no idea. So when we're comparing, you can't compare. It's data relative to no data.
We need the data. Well, thank you for all the good questions, commissioners. Adrian, I want to thank you very, very much again. Very enlightening, educational, and it looks like you're having fun. That's all good, right?
Having a blast. Yeah, it's been a good season so far. I could do without the smoke right now, but
yeah, indeed. Well, thank you again. I wish you well, and we'll see you again maybe in a year or so, and keep up the work, and we look forward to more updates.
Sounds great. Hey, thanks to all the commissioners here. Thanks so much, Larry. Catch you later.
Our pleasure. Okay, thank you. Okay, commission, we are done. This is a reminder, we do start at 8 a.m. tomorrow. This is primarily for Commissioner Keogh. And so we stand recessed until 8 a.m. in the morning. Bye now.
Bye.